former Fuzzy Law. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peters, and now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you, as we're going to be joined in segment number two by one of our good friends, Rob Donaldson. He does a tremendous job with the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets. We're going to be chatting up with him about what he's all seen here in the first week and a half or so of the season, these high-scoring games that we have been getting. We'll take a look at a few games that we've got for Thursday, a little bit of a smaller slate for Thursday, but also some of the teams that he does/does not want to be backing this time of year, the importance of coaching, and so much more. Rob is just a wealth of knowledge, so it's going to be great to be able to get him on in segment number two. In the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via the 5-star review. While I did not get in any Twitter/X questions today, everything is powered by Better. That is BETR on Better. They're making it easier to be able to dive in on some daily fantasy than ever before, because all you need to do is go to BETR.app and type in this promo code of VSINPOD, VSINPOD. That gets you $10 free, no strings attached, anything like that. You just pick your favorite players if you think that they're going to be going over or under in that specific stat, and we're all good to go to talk about some great college basketball that we saw on Wednesday. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
Not a lot of ranked teams in action on Wednesday. As I always like to say with these slates, you get a lot of steak, not so much sizzle. And for Tennessee, I mean, if you look at the final score, it was a lot of sizzle, 99-66. But North Florida, north of 40-point underdogs, they were able to get the job done on the spread. Not too much concern here for Tennessee, though, as you had J.P. Estella off the bench. 23 points, 10 rebounds, Tatum, and he was rock solid. He was able to supply the team with 19 points. For Tennessee, just 8 of 27 from 3. North Florida, not a lot better, 10 of 35 from 3-point range. And for North Florida, they did induce Tennessee into 14 turnovers. We did see 5 turnovers from Jacoby Gillespie. He was able to put in there 21 points, but that was enough for North Florida to be able to get that cover. And then Houston, the defense looked very, very strong. 78 to 45, they were able to take down Oakland. Now, this was another one of those sizable spreads, but in this one for Houston, they were about 30.5-point favorites, so you were able to get in there and cover that number. As for Houston, 19 points out of Emmanuel Sharp, he was living up to his name. He did look very sharp in this one, and then additionally, you were able to get a really good performance as well. 19 points out of Kingston Flemings, who's really impressed as a freshman. Just 9 of 31 from 3 for Houston, but you had Oakland go 3 of 13 from 3, just 16 of 51 from the floor for Oakland. So Houston, they won that rebound battle 46 of 32. They did a nice job dominating this one. Also being able to go out there and dominate, for one, unders across the board, and that included the Missouri versus Minnesota game. As for Missouri, they get a nice 83-60 win over the Golden Gophers. For Minnesota, just not a lot to him from 3-point range, 5 of 23 from the outside. Isaac Usama was able to go 3 of 9 from 3. He threw in there 13 points, and you did have Jaylor Crocker Johnson give you 12 rebounds, but for Minnesota, that was not enough to be able to get the job done, despite the fact that they did win the rebound battle 34-25. But they also lost the turnover battle 11-9. And for Minnesota, they actually did a nice job slowing this game down. But Minnesota allowed Missouri to be a little bit too efficient. 29 of 49 from the floor. As Mark Mitchell, he was able to go 6 of 11 from the floor, 18 points. And then Jacob Cruz and Jane Stone both had double figures off the bench. As Mr. Stone, he was able to give the team 13 points. And then you were able to get 14 out of Jacob Cruz, also out there in the SEC. South Carolina, relatively solid performance here against the Presbyterian, the old blue host, 81-61, the final in this one. And if you're looking at that closing number for South Carolina, they were laying more in that neighborhood, about 16-15.5, so they were able to get the cover in this one. As Jonah Pierce, who was back from injury for the blue host, he was able to give the team 19 points, but a pair of guys for South Carolina came off the bench for double figures in Jordan Butler along Grant Polk. And for South Carolina, they did a nice job holding down Presbyterian from 3-point. They went 0 of 8 from 3-point range. Not often that you see a team go completely over from 3-point range, but that happened here in Texas. They are back to absolutely clobbering teams. About 93-58, they're able to take it to Fairleigh Dickinson, as in this one, Tremont Mark was your top scorer with 20 points, but yeah, Matos Vakovic Kaitis. He was able to come in for 19 points, was very good over at Florida Atlantic last season. Then Jordan Pope, just 11 points. In Texas, they go just 6 of 23 from three-point range, but they did a rock-solid job winning that rebound battle, 54 to 35, as for Fairleigh Dickinson. They were fairly rough from three-point range, 8 of 29 from the outside. This was another one of those games with a relatively large spread, but for Texas, they were on most numbers able to cover this one. They were closing about 31 half-point favorites, so they do find a way to be able to persevere there. We've got random college basketball games in Hawaii, and I do have to do this before the Hawaii versus Mississippi Valley State game wraps up. Actually, through 10 minutes, Mississippi Valley State only down 17 to 12. So for those that were schmucks like myself and took over 40 points with Mississippi Valley State, good start there. We know that Mississippi Valley State could very, very easily blow that one. So we'll see how that goes. But for Prairie View, they were over 30-point underdogs. They don't blow it against Oklahoma State. We saw the big favorites dominate early on the first week or so of the season, but we're starting to see these pesky underdogs be able to rise up a little bit more. 94 to 67, final this one for Prairie View. They did a solid job winning the turnover battle, 14 to 12, and for Oklahoma State, they absolutely clobbered Prairie View on the glass, 54 to 31, as you had Victorious Miller. He was victorious in giving the team 30 points, but hey, 16 points out of Tayron Joseph, who two seasons ago over at Southern was averaging 20 points per contest. That was just enough for this Prairie View team to be able to remain lively. For Indiana, no such trouble covering a big number. They lay it on UW-Milwaukee 101 to 70, as this looks like a completely reborn offense, and a guy in Tucker DeVries who is able to do it all in this game. He only had 12 points but 5 boards, pair of assists, 3 steals, a little bit of this and that. And Lamar Wilkerson, who was last year over at Sam Houston State, he has been very rock solid thus far, as he was able to slide the team with 24 points. And for Indiana, they go 14 of 28 from 3-point range. I anticipate a little bit of regression moving forward, but and that was a nice performance. And then Oregon has looked a little bit shaky to begin the season. Close calls against Rice along with Hawaii, but 83 to 69, they got their offense going. They're able to get the win against South Dakota State. They were closing in a lot of places right around about 16 and a half, 17, so not able to quite get the cover there, but still a much better performance from Oregon in this one as you go 15 of 40 from 3-point range, and they did a nice job winning the rebound battle, 37 to 33. Nate Biddle, he was able to supply a double-double, 14 points and rebounds, and Jackson Shellset, who began the season with a hand injury, looks like he's been able to recover from that. He was able to supply the team with 22 points. And then if you're looking at other action that we saw in the earliest game, Georgetown a win but no cover against Binghamton, 83 to 70 the final. So anyone that was tagging along with the pick miss plays, you were able to get there on both the over and you were able to get there with regards to Binghamton. South Florida just all over compensating this one, 150. This is a South Florida team that was laying over 30 points. They cover that number very, very easily, as for South Florida, 12 of 38 from three, and Cobbett State had 16 made field goals and 18 turnovers. That's not going to bode very, very well for you, and this boded very, very well for those that took this one out there in the random game in Hawaii. The Manhattan Jaspers get the job done against Utah Tech. This by a count of 79 to 75. Want to note that Will Sidner, one of the top scorers for Manhattan a season ago, still dealing with eligibility concerns, but for Manhattan, they go 8 of 19 from 3-point range. They shoot 50% overall from the floor. Do lose the rebound battle, 36 to 35, but they do find a way to persevere here as Utah Tech, they shot themselves in the foot. They went 9 of 15 at the free throw line. That's a big reason why they lost this one for Marquette after they got completely plowed by Indiana over the weekend. This was a nice bounce back. They covered this game easily, 89 to 49. They absolutely lay it on Little Rock. Little Rock was just unable to take care of the ball. 18 made field goals, 20 turnovers. When you have more turnovers than made field goals, typically it's not going to be a great night for you. And you had 16 points out of Chase Ross. So Marquette able to restore a little bit of order there, as it's been a little bit wobbly for the Big East teams on the spread thus far this season. And it was wobbly for Eastern Washington against the spread last season. Started out 2-1 against the spread, but Seattle, they were able to get them big time, 94 to 67. Final in that one for UC San Diego. They're going through a little bit of transition, but they find a way to persevere against Fresno State, 78 to 73 the final, and they're off to a 3-0 start in their new coaching regime as well. And then Southern Indiana has been a little bit rough against the spread. They're now 0-3 against the spread. South Dakota, 89 to 74. They find a way to persevere, get the job done. And the Will Wade era off to a very, very nice start for NC State. They've been able to cover all three of these games. They have scored 94 plus in all of them as they absolutely lambaste UNC Greensboro, 110 to 64 the final. I do feel like this is an NC State team that, when it's all said and done, should be ranked. And pretty much everyone be able to step up in this one. Darion Williams, he was your main headline. line scorer. He was able to supply the team with 32 points, 10 rebounds, but Matt Abel, he was able to give the team double figures off the bench. Paul McNair Jr., 27 points. Kadir Copeland, who followed Will Wade on over two NC State, six assists, 13 points. Very nice dominant performance out there. And additionally, you did see a pretty solid performance here from VCU. They do take down St. Peter's on a lot of numbers did not cover, but 78-61 final in that one. So the changing of the guard out there, so far so good. And George Washington, this was a big giant performance against American. American, a team that typically plays very slow defense oriented, 107-67. George Washington, a flamethrower of 15 of 28 from 3-point range. Garrett Johnson, I believe this was his first game coming off of injury, 13 points off the bench. Trey Dinkins was able to supply 23 points off the bench. Seven different guys for George Washington, our nation's first president, were able to score at least 10 points in this one. And Virginia Tech looking solid. St. Joe's, I know that they had the coaching change in the offseason. Steve Donahue had to take the job in September, but Virginia Tech, 94-59. They absolutely lay it on St. Joe's. St. Joe's is actually pretty even up with regards to turnover battle, but for Virginia Tech, 11 of 27 from 3-point range. Nicholas Avedeus, who comes over from Greece, 14 points, 5 rebounds. And for St. Joe's, they were average Joes from 3-point range. They go 5 of 28 from 3-point range. So very nice, easy win there. And you did see Western Michigan, after they were trailing in the first half against Fort Wayne, get an 83-71 win. And want to be noting a little bit of injury concern for Brown. Another non-cover for them. Their own three straight up and against the spread. 90-77 final in this one for Brown. They're currently without really their top two scorers that were supposed to be returning for them, including Landon Lewis. So do want to be just filing that away. And for Boston U, and every one of their starters score at least 12 points in this one. Boston U, traditionally a defense-oriented team, they were able to do a nice job in terms of being able to take it to them. And Cal Poly, quality cover out there on the West Coast. They don't win, but they're able to cover over 15 points against Colorado State, 93-79. The final, as for Colorado State, the Oliver Furkmanesh era, looking pretty solid. Josh Pasquarelli, 22 points, and for Colorado State, they go 16 of 36 from 3, but Cal Poly, not quite as good, but still pretty solid. 14 of 36 from 3-point range, and if you're taking a look trend-wise at where we're getting in college basketball right now, favorites have still been cleaning out overall for the season, but we're starting to see those underdogs be able to rise up. I'm doing this with still that Hawaii game pending out there for college basketball, but you did see the underdogs on Wednesday prior to that game go 21-19 against the spread, so we're seeing some improvement, and we saw the unders be able to outdo the overs, 21 unders to 19 overs, so that was solid. Now, if you look at the season to date, you still have the over hitting at a little bit over 50%, but it's very much ironed out over the last 2 days. We had a ton of unders on Tuesday. Right now, 221 overs to 220 unders, so things are adjusting, and favorites still cleaning us 233, 206, and 5 against the spread. That's a little bit over 53%. So that's where we're seeing college basketball right now, and that's what we all got on Wednesday. Now let's talk about the games for Thursday, the start of the season, and so much more with our good friend Rob Donaldson. He does amazing work with the show/podcast Rob's Best Bets, and he joins me on the flip side right here on Cusco Soups with myself, Craig Eats Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast. Are you looking to get an inside edge this college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is V-S-I-N, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at cbbanalytics.com. That is cbbanalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSiN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSiN because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSiN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter. And start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSIN. Las Vegas for Cusco Soups with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man. As we've got Rob Donaldson aboard, he does a tremendous job with the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets, taking a look at this great game of college basketball that we all know and love. I know that he did a great job on the baseball front. He always, all 12 months out of the year, is taking a look at this great sport. He has been locked and loaded here at the beginning part of the season. He does a great job with the Rob's Best Bets show as well over on YouTube.com/Rob Donaldson. And you're able to follow him on Twitter/X at RobDFB. And Rob, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Greg. And man, we talked about it all offseason, kind of building up to this point, but we've got legitimate games, right? We've actually got awesome games taking place night in, night out on the mid-major level, on the high-major level, some mid-major versus high-major matchups that are awesome as well. And I'm just excited to be talking about college hoops with you today.
Oh, it is great that we actually have games to talk about. Now, the one good thing about not having games is that you couldn't be wrong until they actually hit the floor. And just what have you made out of the first week plus of the season? Because it feels like we're getting less defense than ever before with so many games reaching the 90s and the 100s, more so than I could ever remember.
Yeah, and I think this kind of goes to the point that you and I had been talking about, you know, even just the past two off seasons where when you formulate these rosters based on NIL and acquiring talent, well, the premium is placed at the guard position or the scorers. And sometimes when you adopt a scorer to your new program and he's just trying to fit in, he's just going to do what he does best. He's going to score. And maybe there's a lack of defense element that's also on the other side. And so when you do have so many rosters that are returning only 15, 5, 20% of the minutes from the previous season, well, hey, where's that 80% or 85% comprised of? It's comprised of players who kind of played themselves into a portal acquisition status. And I think because of those kind of formulations of these rosters, we are seeing a lot of high scoring matchups. And we're also seeing, I think, a kind of a pointed lack of defense as well that goes along with it.
Yep, it has been very interesting to look at. And how much have you had to adjust your totals as a result? Because I've had to jack mine way in that cup, higher than I've ever had to before. And I do think that there's going to be a buy point on the unders, and I felt like we actually saw that very much on Tuesday. But I've had to make more adjustments early on during the season with totals than I feel like I ever have to in the past.
And I will say, you know, styles make matchups. You know, we hear this about in MMA all the time, is styles make fights. Well, in college basketball, styles make, you know, scoring or lack thereof. And I do think there are certain teams that immediately, because of continuity, because of buy-in, because of maybe just great coaching, have immediately implemented their style, and it's readily apparent of how this team is going to play hoops. And those are the teams that I think have a little bit more of a predictable line game by game on those totals, whether it be a team total or the full game. And there are others that, you know, like we just talked about, whether it's, you know, a new head coaching regime, a new roster comprised of a lot of transfer talent, or maybe a lot of young players that are being implemented in the lineup, we just don't really know what the style of the team is going to look like. And as a result, we are seeing totals that might be 20 or 30 points way off the mark, because this is kind of unprecedented territory in the sense that these are rosters that are fairly brand new from start to from top to bottom.
Yep, it has been really interesting to be able to take a look at that element of things, as Rob Donaldson, who does great work with the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets, is joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And with regards to early part of the season, a lot of these teams, they've only played like three games, sometimes some teams maybe even a fourth, some teams only two. But have there been a few teams that have stood out to you, whether that be to the positive or the negative, in terms of what you expected from them this season?
Yeah, and I think the best part about this time of year, when there's only two or three games under a lot of these teams' belts, is you're going to see a lot of 1-2s or 0-3s or 0-2s. And basically what I'm getting at is a lot of sloppy looking records. And that's not always indicative of how bad a team actually is, or how, you know, potentially good they can evolve into once they get past these initial woes. And for that reason, what that absolutely screams in your face of is, okay, we have some betting value. We have a team with an ugly looking win-loss record because everybody overreacts at this point in the season. And all of a sudden, we can kind of buy that dip on some halfway decent teams. And one of the teams that immediately sticks out to me as an impressive, ugly record looking team, I don't know how deep you want to go here, but I'll go deep right out the gate: Queen's University, the Charlotte Royals. And when you are looking at the matchups they've already had so far, a game against Winthrop that went down on the wire, a game against Villanova where they really, really hung tough, and then a game against Duquesne that went to overtime. And honestly, they should have beat an A-10 team outright in Duquesne. And I think when you're looking down the next slate of games that they have, and you're seeing a lot of mid-majors that have looked very shaky in the early goings, again, this is a 1-3 team that I think is going to be catching a lot of numbers, and that's where you really can extract, I think, a ton of value with a team like that.
And I think that you bring up a great question, because there are some teams where you want to buy the dip on, and there are some teams where you might need to sit there and say, oh, they might just not be good this year. And that brings me to Wichita State versus Loyola Chicago. Loyola Chicago actually opens up as a 6-point dog. Now they're a 3.5-point underdog. Right now the total is 151.5. What do you make out of this matchup? Because I had high hopes for Loyola Chicago coming into the year. This has been about as much of a sinking stock as Enron right now. And with Loyola Chicago, I have not loved what I've seen, including losing at home to Mercyhurst to begin the season.
Loss to Mercyhurst is the one that sticks out, right? And I will say, you know, the next time out on their home floor, or at least in Chicago, we should say, against North Texas, they were very, very competent in terms of the second half. It felt like they were out of the game in the first half before battling back. And I do think, again, when you're looking at some of these teams in the early goings, there's going to be some serious growing pains. Heck, you know, against North Texas in the second half, a guy named Chuck Love, who is a true freshman, was one of the dudes who just kind of rose to the surface as, hey, maybe this is a building point game. And as those veterans start to mix with these young players, and we're starting to see more and more freshmen and young players who were inexperienced, you know, coming into the season, you know, start to really, really get minutes on a lot of these rosters, I think around maybe the turn in December, we're going to be starting to buy in back on a lot of these teams. And although Loyola Chicago has been shaky, to say the least, in the early goings, I feel like this is potentially a roster that you want to buy in on, just maybe not right now.
Yeah, with Loyola Chicago, they're also getting plowed on the glass, despite the fact that they brought Miles Rubin back from a season ago as well. That's been a little bit less magnificent for them, and I do think that that's going to be something to watch for moving forward. And when it comes to this game, I am a guy that thought that Mark Madsen was a great hire a few seasons ago over at Cal. First two seasons weren't really getting off the ground, but I've loved what I've seen out of them in the first few games. They go on the road against Kansas, so a lot of travel here. Right now with this bunch, you're going to be finding them in terms of Cal about a 6.5-point underdog, and the Sotos went from a 154 to a 161.5. We've been seeing a lot of these big jumps in terms of these Sotos. How do you take a look at a game like this? Because with Jerome Tang, I just am feeling a little bit sour on him as a coach. I recognize that Kansas State got the job done in those first few games, but I feel like this could be the year that Cal finally starts to get things rolling.
Yeah, and I've been wanting to believe in Cal the past two seasons, much like yourself, when you're kind of looking at Mark Madsen and you're saying, hey, that's a guy who can build up a program. Obviously, from a talent accumulation standpoint, it is there at Cal. And, you know, I have been impressed with Kansas State in the early goings. It does kind of feel like when things are going right for this team, they are going to be putting up in those 90-point margins. And can Cal, on the road, in their first true road test, handle that adversity, of that scoring adversity that could truly be pushed from minute one until the final minute of the game? That's where I think when you're looking at a spread of 6 points, kind of like what we saw in Louisville, Kentucky last night, I think it's going to be a very similar matchup with less talent on the floor. Ultimately, I think that's kind of how the game ends up being played. And although I wouldn't feel super enthralled to back Kansas State, that probably would be the side that I would lay if this number stays around that 6-point range.
And I do think that it's going to be really interesting, because if this were a game that was more on a neutral court or something like that, I'd probably be a bit more willing to back California. But that said, with the travel going on out there to the Little Apple, that's probably going to take it out of this team a little bit as well. As Rob Donaldson, who does great work with the show/podcast Rob's Best Bets, is joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And although it's a relatively small slate of games that we do have on this Thursday, there is one big game. It's Alabama versus Purdue. This total has climbed above 175, and right now Purdue about a 3 to a 3.5-point underdog. What do you make out of this matchup? Because this is one of these games where I feel like with Purdue, they're going to be able to get a lot of scoring going, but Purdue, as we both know, they're not a high-tempo team, and I feel like if you like the under, you probably like Purdue a little bit more, and if you like the over, that probably favors Alabama.
Yeah, and obviously this is kind of the run back from last year when Alabama traveled out to West Lafayette, and although that game was very competitive in the first half, Purdue sort of shelled them in the second half, and it was kind of a wake-up call right out of the gate for an Alabama team that obviously had high aspirations. And this team this year as well has some very high aspirations. And when you are looking at a roster like Alabama that, yes, they turned over a lot of their key players, but retained some of those kind of key component guys that are supposed to be establishing the culture, you know, how do they react coming off of a big St. John's win, going up against a team at home that got them last year in Purdue's building? I feel like there's an extra layer of motivation to say, hey, we can't rest on our laurels. We have to go out here and push. And I think although the number is reasonable enough where you can say, I want to take one side or the other, and you can make a compelling argument for both, I kind of tend to think that there's an upside here for Alabama to almost run Purdue off the floor if everything is going right. And for that reason, I do feel comfortable laying that -2, -3, -3.5 type number that might be out there and just saying, hey, bank on the upside. Let's see it come to fruition.
And that is going to be a little bit of a revenge game, but we've got another revenge game where I don't know if revenge is going to be had. UW Green Bay is right now a 10-11 point underdog against St. Thomas. And for St. Thomas, not necessarily the world's greatest road trip, losing that game to St. Mary's and losing to Washington State by double figures. But I look at this UW Green Bay team. They have a coach who's also trying to be a radio show host. I don't know anything about the radio show because I don't listen in, but I know that he's not been a good college basketball coach, that's for sure. And this feels like a very short number, and you were talking about teams with not necessarily a good record and buying low on them. This feels like a tremendous spot to buy low on the Tommies.
100%, because are the Tommies one of these teams that's going to light up the college basketball world? No, but when you're going up against Green Bay and Gottlieb, you're going to get it's very easy to win by double digits, and obviously we're seeing a line here that represents that to potentially be the case. And yeah, St. Mary's probably a lot better than Green Bay. Washington State probably a lot better than Green Bay. Heck, even Army is a lot better than Green Bay. And once again, I think we're seeing a Green Bay team that I have no idea what the direction is at this point. And although they had Sundance Wicks, and that might be in a lot of people's mind, before Sundance Wicks, they were terrible. They were bottom feeders in the entire sport. And now I kind of feel like they're right back there, if not even below kind of where they were prior to Sundance Wicks as well. And so this is, again, one of those kind of weird win-loss record type matchups that absolutely you lay the hammer down on the Tommies because they could win by 20 or even 30 plus.
Yep, I'm right there with you. This is a spot where the side that I want to bet is the not Green Bay side. So right. We are very much in lockstep there. And I do think that that's important to be taking a look at towards the early part of the season. It's coaching because, again, with UW Green Bay, they brought back Marcus Hall, Preston Rudinger. They're not necessarily bad players, but I just can't back a team that's coached by Doug Gottlieb right now on this short of line. And I do feel like there are some of these teams that maybe they have a lot of turnover, like a UC Irvine, for example, that I will buy in on them, and then there are other teams where I just can't do it.
Absolutely, and like one of those teams that I know that you have had some run-ins with, Mississippi Valley State, that is just one of those teams where they can set any line.
I did take the 41.5 points against Hawaii, I will say that.
And hey, you know, maybe you're not wrong. You know, maybe they finally got it right in terms of the books projecting how terrible this team can really, it's gotten so bad where they can drop a 70-point line, and I don't think that I would still take it. Like, it's just one of those things where their level of bad knows no bounds, and I just don't even know how to predict it at this point.
Oh, man, with Mississippi Valley State, it's just, I think that they would be a below average at the Division II level at this point. They are that awful, so yeah, that's not great, to say the least. And is there anything else that's really going to be standing out to you on this card for Thursday? Like I said, it's not necessarily the world's biggest card, but I do think that we've got a little bit of intrigue. And certainly that big one versus Alabama versus Purdue is going to be a lot of fun. And hey, Pittsburgh versus West Virginia is going to be fun as well.
Yeah, the brawl is always a great matchup. But, you know, kind of sticking with this theme of ugly win-loss records and kind of almost buying the dip on them before they start actually winning and materializing those games, I think you look at a team like a Cornell where they're 0-2. Their first two losses are both on the road against Kent State and Illinois State, two teams that are kind of projected in the top three, top four of their respective conferences. And honestly, they were tied in the second half very, very late with Kent State, despite being down early. And same with Illinois State. That was a very gettable game. They dropped both. They're 0-2. But this is a team that once their offense gets going, it can really, really hum. And Lafayette on the other side, I just don't think has the scoring prowess, the talent, the athleticism to even kind of compete on that side of the ball with Cornell. And for that reason, Cornell's laying 4.5 points. That's actually probably one of my favorite bets here on Thursday. And I say you can even ladder that up all the way to 10.5 if you get alt lines.
I don't know if I can quite get to a 10.5, but I made my line 7.5 personally, so I am right there with you. I am willing to lay that number with Cornell. And for Cornell, certainly a little bit of a less than savory performance against Illinois State, but I think we both know Illinois State going to be very solid out there in the Missouri Valley Conference. So I love that look. And Rob, I always love getting you on this podcast as you do a tremendous job in terms of taking a look at this wonderful game of college basketball. You're very dialed in, so let the good people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Well, hey, Greg, it's always a blast talking ball with you, my man, and I can't wait that I'm so excited that we have right this point all the way through March, all the way pretty much through April of just nothing but college hoops. And yeah, we're going to be here every single step of the way. But yeah, for those who want to follow my college basketball bets in this sport, every single Monday through Friday on my YouTube channel at Rob Donaldson. And on the weekends, it's going to be on my Twitter at RobDFB. But as always, Greg, I appreciate having me on, my man.
Absolutely. Rob, he does such an excellent job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights and did so once again today. So big thanks, Rob, for joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. And coming next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Thursday as we have some bank shots. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Rob Donaldson. He does a tremendous job with the show / podcast, Rob's Best Bets. Every single time he joins me, lends such great insights. He did so once again today. So a big thanks to Rob for joining me in the last segment. And now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter / X feed at GUnit_81. And we are going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the games in bigger conferences first and then the games involving the smaller conferences. This is the MEAC, the SWAC, the Atlantic Sun, the Patriot League, the Big South. If I didn't already say the Big South, those are going to be the games that are going to be at the bottom. And how about if we do get things started with 743, 744 neutral court game between Central Michigan and South Alabama. South Alabama is between a 4.5 to a 5-point favorite total on this game, finding it at a 142.5, and I made a total of a 143.5. I am going to be in on the over. Now, this is going to be a bit of an early game, so that's something that I always love, but with South Alabama, they pretty much dare you to shoot threes. Last year, opponents took 58% of their field goal attempts from 3-point. I believe that this is a game that Rocco Miller is going to be on the broadcast for as well. He joined me earlier in the week talking about this, and for South Alabama, they have been able to get to 76-plus points each of their first three games of the season. Now, it was against not-so-great defense. Alcorn State, Toledo, and a non-D1 team, but for South Alabama, even though they do lose some of the main pieces from a season ago, they do bring back someone like a Randy Brady, who's a nice this-and-that guy for them last season, was playing the team with like 4.5 points, was able to shoot 40% from 3-point range off the bench. They haven't gotten a lot out of J.J. Wheat, but he was a nice ancillary piece last year, mid-30s, 3-point shooter, steal and a half, 6 points per contest, so I do think that there's a little bit of upside there. John Broome has really fallen out of the rotation after he was given the team 5 rebounds per game last season, but Peyton Law is another one of those guys that comes up from the non-D1 ranks. South Alabama has been really good in terms of finding these guys at the non-D1 ranks and having them come up. He's been averaging darn near 20 points per contest, and with Central Michigan, they make a big coaching change in the offseason. It was very clear clear that the Tony Barbie era just was not great, to say the least, for this team. So they decided to go to the D2 level to bring in Andy Brockma. And I do think that it's going to be successful when it's all said and done. Night number one against Appalachian State, an 82-66 win. Now they get completely lambasted in their next game against Bradley. So you've got two sample sets, one that is very good and one that is not very good. Fat Brooks, he comes on over from Michigan, where he was just unable to get out there on the floor, but was a pretty highly touted recruit. Tamero Adley is someone that comes on up from the non-D1 ranks. You've got a lot of these guys that do come up from the non-Division 1 level, especially their backcourt. Jackson Whitaker is someone that should be seeing some good minutes. He's another one of those guys that transfers in. And then you've got Keenan Gardner. He's one of the main holdovers from, actually, the D1 level. He was at IU Indy when they made the coaching change. He decided to go to Central Michigan, about 5.5 points in the neighborhood, about 5 boards per contest. And you do have a Central Michigan team that I think that they're going to be able to match in terms of shooting what South Alabama is going to be able to do, because I do think that this is going to be a team that shoots it relatively well from three, but they just have really no size down low outside of Nathan Clearbutt, who he's a true 7-footer. He comes on up from the non-D1 ranks, but he seems a little bit unpolished. He's a guy with a little bit of versatility, but that said, I do think that South Alabama is going to be able to do a nice job, be able to force some turnovers at Central Michigan. They've had 27 turnovers in the first two games of the season against teams that really don't pressure, so circumstance where I did set my line at 7.5, especially with this being an early game. I think that Central Michigan going to look to run, but may not have their sea legs under them with it being this early of a game. So circumstance where I did set my line at 7.5, I'm going to be willing to lay with South Alabama, and 143 or less, I'm in on the over. 745, 746 on the card. It is Pittsburgh, and they are on the road. They're facing off against West Virginia. West Virginia, a pretty decent-sized favorite here, 4.5 to a 5-point favorite. Total, you're finding this anywhere between a 134.5 to a 136, and I'm in on the over. I did set my total at 140.5. Pittsburgh has gotten to 74-plus points in each of their first three games of the season. Defense has been relatively solid. These are two teams that are currently in the top 50 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and West Virginia, they bring in Russ Hodge, and you know that he's going to be able to play a slow, grimy style. Over at North Texas last year, that unit was outside the top 360 in terms of total possessions per game, and they were always a top 75 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. West Virginia, as a matter of fact, right now 17th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but now they face off against a Pittsburgh team that has each other top forward scorers shooting at least 38.5% from 3-point, as a team they shoot darn near 37% from 3-point, and West Virginia, they've been shooting about 33% from 3. Not necessarily great, not necessarily awful. For West Virginia, they're going to have a little bit of a tough time down low with Cameron Corn, who last year was able to give the team 6-plus rebounds per contest. He's been able to take some nice strides forward this season, as Harlan Obiana, who was rock solid over at Niagara 2 years ago last year over at UNC Wilmington, he's going to have his hands full there. For West Virginia, you do have to wonder if Trayson Eaglesaf is going to be able to get online a little bit more as well. Was a nice score over at North Dakota last year, only about 6 points per contest, shooting less than 30% from 3 this season, and Connor Ruff only shooting about 32% from 3. You expect that to go up a little bit as well, as last season shot 41.5% from 3 when he was over at Chattanooga. This has been a unit that has really been based around Brenton Lauren, as he follows Hodge on over from North Texas along Jasper Floyd, and Floyd is just a stat sheet stuff for 11 points, 4 assists, 4 rebounds per contest, and you've had Lorient be able to supply 49 points in the first 3 games of the season, and that's a big reason why I did set West Virginia here as a 4.5 point favorite. If I'm getting 5+, I would be willing to take a shot on Pittsburgh, but I do think that they should be a mild-sized favorite here in the backyard brawl with Pittsburgh, though. I think what's going to be able to help them out is the versatility of DeMarco Minor to be able to match up with Floyd, as he's been able to supply about 14.6 boards, 4 assists. Wasn't necessarily a great scorer over at Oregon State last year, only about 9.5 points per game, but he has always been a guy that's been able to stuff the stat sheet. And then you have to deal with Papa Amandu Kante down low for Pittsburgh. Not much of a scorer, but has been supplying the team with 8 rebounds per contest, with bearing he along Cameron Corn up with a lot of good 3-point shooters. You've been able to have one of the international men of mystery be able to step up in Roman Selpa, who he comes over as a 6'6", a little bit of a wing. I like what I've been seeing as well out of Nojis Asterius, hopefully I said that correct, 6'5", a little bit of a sophomore player. I do think that Pittsburgh holds in there. I think that this is going to be a game that could be coming down to some late game fouling, and I think that that's going to help you out with regards to total. I don't think that's necessarily going to be a high possession game, but I do think that there's going to be some efficiency on the offensive side of things. Pittsburgh has been turning the ball over 13 times for contests as they're in a little bit of transition in the backcourt with losing Jalen Lowe. But that said, at a 5+, I'm going to be willing to take the points with Pittsburgh, and it's at a total of 140.5, so I'm going to be in on this total over as well. 748 on the card. And it's San Jose State. They are on the road. They're facing off against Michigan State. Michigan State between a 23.5 to a 24.5 point favorite. Total on this game, it is 142.5, and semi-total 145. I do like the over for Michigan State. It looks like it's going to be a very similar team to last year. Last year, they were outside the top 275 in terms of three-point shooting percentage, but they did a rock-solid job down low. They did a nice job in terms of valuing the ball. Looks like we're going to be back to that with them once again, and you saw them play very good defense against Arkansas. They held them to 66 points, and with this team, they're just so rough down low. Jackson Kaler last season was a nice rebounder with about 7.5 boards, 8 points per contest, and he's actually been able to pull in their 22 rebounds in the first two games as far this season. Jeremy Fierce is not necessarily a fearsome scorer, but does a nice job dishing it out. You want to see a little bit more on Trey Fort, just 14 points in the first two games of the season after over at Samford last season. He was one of the more efficient three-point shooters in all of college basketball, but you've gotten a lot out of Colin Carr, who's been able to supply 27 points in the first two games of the season. Last year was a nice sixth man with about 8 points, 3.5 boards, mid-30s three-point shooter, but really didn't expand his game to take a lot of threes, and you have to think that Michigan State is very much going to be pile-driving the ball down low, and when San Jose State has been good, they've been having a lot of nice rebounders, they've been able to control the boards. When they've been bad, they have not been able to do so, and right now for San Jose State, they have a negative rebound differential, and I think that might be a little bit of a rough time for them on the glass, despite the fact that they bring in Yafat Mundi, who was over at Iona last season, where he was averaging about 7.5 rebounds per game, like his overall game. But outside of him, you don't have a lot down low. Sadariq Nananana has just never been able to take strides forward despite beginning his career over at Boise State, and he was also spending a little bit of time at Seton Hall. This is a team that's going to be based around the backcourt, and Kobe Garland, 51 points in the first two games of the season, very rock solid last year at Longwood, mid-30s three-point shooter, 12 points, 4.5 assists, so I mean, he's able to do a pretty rock solid job. They dealt with a little bit of injury to Javon Hanna to begin the season, when the main transfers that comes in from Western Michigan, but not a guy that really pops it from three-point range for Hanna. He was out there in their first game against Utah. He missed their most recent game, so that's something that had to dock them a little bit. Jermaine Washington, he's a guy that was a holdover for last year, where he was coming out off the bench, gave the team 4 points per contest, but a San Jose State team that was pretty rock solid with their three-point shooting last season, they lose so many of those guys, and now they're trying to sort of, for lack of a better term, pick up the pieces, and the defense has been very lackadaisical as well for this bunch. They have given up 169 points in the first two games of the season, and that was against UC Santa Barbara along with Utah, so I do have some issues there, and I do think that this team is going to be, for lack of a better term, just plowed down low, and I do think that Michigan State finds a way to be able to get the job done. Do think we've went a little bit too far with this line, because again, Michigan State, not necessarily the most fearsome three-point shooting team, and I do think that Ben Rosenberger, who comes on over after he was the fold for the team last year, I think that he's going to be able to elevate them just a little bit, so do think that the line is getting a little bit out of hand, but do think that Michigan State going to be able to get some points up on the board against the San Jose State defense that looks to have taken a setback from being outside the top 200 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis last year. Made my line 21, so we'll take those points from San Jose State, and I'm going to be in on that over as well. And then we've got 749, 750 on the card. Purdue, they are on the road against Alabama. Alabama, a 3 to a 3.5 point favorite. Total on this game, it is 174.5, and I'm going to be in on the under. I did set my total at 167.5. Now for Purdue, they were a top 20 team in terms of both points scored on a per possession basis last year and 3-point shooting percentage. You bring back Braden Smith, you bring back Fletcher Lawyer. Those two guys form one of the best backcourts in all of college basketball, but with Purdue, they've never really been a team that has pushed tempo. As a matter of fact, last year, they were outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game, and I believe they might play a little bit faster this year. That was indicated by the fact that they had that nice shootout game a few nights ago against Oakland, but still, you bring in Oscar Clough to be able to really man things down low, and that does put me here on the points with Purdue. I only set them as 1.5 point underdog. Don't quite want the money line in this game, because you also have an Alabama backcourt that, for one, they play at a just absolutely ridiculous pace. They were number one in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and they've got two out of sight, out of mind guys from a year ago. Latrell Wrightsell along Houston Ballard were both dealing with injuries. Being able to get these two guys back after at mid-major stops, both of these guys at one point in their career, they were averaging 16 plus points per contest, have always been very efficient three-point shooters. They add some spark to this offensive and then LeBaron Filan coming back after he last season was a relatively nice ancillary option. 10.5 points per contest, didn't necessarily shoot it well from three. He looks to have taken a big stride forward this year. He's right now shooting 44% from three. He's doing a nice job of being able to dole out the ball to the likes of Wright, Sell, and company. That's big, but you do lose so much of that front court with Grant Nelson and company out of the fold. Now, Taylor Bowen, he has looked very rock solid this far this season after he was more of an ancillary gadget guy who did shoot 41% from three-point range last season at 6'10", but I do think that Oscar Clough, who led all of college basketball in terms of rebounding last year, that really fortifies Purdue down low, along with bringing back Trey Kaufman Wren. It is one of the most experienced teams in all of college basketball in Purdue, and I think that they're one of the few teams in all of college basketball that Alabama can dramatically speed up. I do think that this is going to be faster than your normal Purdue game. That's why I set a total of a 167.5, but that said, I do think that with this Purdue team, after they were very lackadaisical with their two-point shooting percentage defense, they actually guarded the arc well. I think that they're going to be a little bit better with that defense with bringing in Oscar Clough, and additionally, I do think that they're going to do a nice job staying in front of these guards and forcing up some bad shots, so I set my line at 1.5. I'm willing to take the points here with Purdue. Not so much a money line, but I'll take those points, and I'm in on the under sub. I total 167.5. 751, 752 on the card. It is Monmouth, and they're going to be on the road. They're going to be facing off against Seton Hall, and Seton Hall is between a 12.5 to a 13-point favorite. It's on this game between 136.5 to a 138.5. Semi-total 136.5, so now that we're getting up to a 138+, I'm in on the under. Seton Hall looks to be a little bit improved on their offense this season, but man, this was a team that last year was outside the top three in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, and they really didn't do a great job of addressing the fact that they were one of the worst three-point shooting teams in all of college basketball last year. Right now, they're shooting 30.8% from three-point range. I think that that's pretty much where they're going to be. Like, Adam Clark last year was a really nice scorer over at Merrimack. He was giving you 19 points, 6 assists, 2.5 steals per contest, but he also shot 28% from 3-point range. You bring in TJ Simpkins, part of that Simpkins duel over at Elon. Again, nice numbers there, 14 points, 3 assists, but he shot 26% from 3-point range, and that's going to be a big hamperance on this team, and that's part of the reason why I did set a line of 12.5, so at 13+, I'm going to be willing to take the points with Monmouth. Now, Monmouth probably going to have a little bit of a tough time down low. You've got Najah Hines, who is coming as a freshman. He's been able to give the Seton Hall a little bit of a boost, but you have not seen Pat Sumic yet for Seton Hall. I don't know what's going on there, but he seems to be dealing with a little bit of an injury. Jacob Dower is someone that at 6'7", doesn't necessarily have like the world's greatest size. And then Elijah Fisher is a little bit of a do-it-all guy that comes over from Pacific a season ago where, again, 15.5 points, 4.5 boards, but shot 30% from three-point range. It was a little bit of a walking turnover. Meanwhile, for Monmouth, they no longer have that one go-to guy like 2 years ago. They had Xander Rice completely go off. Abdi Bashir was that guy last year. They're searching for that this year. Right now, Jason Rivera's Torres, he's been able to give the team a combined 33 points in the first two games of the year. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be him, but you've got good versatility with someone like an Andrew Ball who's been stuffing the stat sheet over the last few years. Jack Collins last year, 9.5 points, 5.5 boards, 3 assists, steal per contest, career only about 31% three-point shooter. And Monmouth was one of the worst teams in all of college basketball. The guards are 2-point shooting percentage last season, so they're a little bit hampered on offense with that regard, and they do lose quite a bit of the three-point shooting with Bashir now being out of the fold as well. So that's very much something to be noting, but I do still think that they're going to be able to hold in there against a Seton Hall team that I think that they're going to do a nice job defensively, leave a lot to be desired on offense, though. And I do think that bringing back Justin Ray, who's been utilized as a little bit more of a sixth man, that's going to be relatively solid for this team as well. Mr. Ray is someone who last season, he was coming in off the bench, shot in the mid-30s from three-point range, didn't see a lot of run where he was only giving the team like 4 points per contest, but I do like the way that he is elevating for the team. I do think that in the end, with Seton Hall just not enough firepower on offense to cover this summer. So at 13+, going to be willing to take the points with Monmouth. Semi-total 136.5. So at a 137+, I'm also going to be in on this total under as well. 753, 754 on the card. Wichita State plays also Loyola Chicago. Loyola Chicago open up in some places as a 6-point underdog. Right now I'm seeing a lot of 3.5. Total on this game is 151.5. And with Wichita State, I did set them as a favorite of 6.5 points. So I'm going to be willing to lay it. This has been a no good, very bad, terrible run for Loyola Chicago to begin the season. For Loyola Chicago, they have been just getting absolutely pounded on the boards. They are currently 280th in the country in terms of rebound percentage, which really does surprise me because you bring back Miles Rubin from a season ago, guy that was able to give you a block and a half, 6+ rebounds per game. Loyola Chicago has never been a great team in terms of being able to hit the offensive glass, but typically they do a good job of not letting up second and third chances, even in that game against Mercyhurst. They were doing a little bit of that, so that's very concerning. You've got Justin Moore, who's been giving you more thus far this season after you dealt with injury. victories over the last few seasons. He's been able to give the team 5 assists, 14 points per contest, but also with Loyola Chicago, just uncharacteristically sloppy with them as well. A little bit over 11 turnovers per game thus far this season. It feels like this backcourt maybe added a little bit too much because I like Joseph Alajoseph. He's a guy that stands in the neighborhood about 6'7", is a career 38% three-point shooter, had some solid minutes over at Minnesota and Cal over the last few seasons. DeWilk Tavares was a really good scorer over at Charleston last year, 13 points per game, shot 41% from three-point range, and I mean, I thought that Dominic Harris would be able to give you a little bit of something, but they're just not playing him right now, so that's been very confusing, to say the least. And then for Wichita State, the Berg is going to help them out down low. Will Berg, a 7'2" big man that comes in from Purdue. He should be a dominator for this team as he's been supplying 11.5 rebounds in the small sample size that we've seen for Wichita State, their biggest kryptonite last year with three-point shooting. They were 339th in all of college basketball with regards to their three-point shooting percentage. That appears to be very much improved this season because you bring in Keenan Giles last season over at UNC Greensboro. It's given the team 15.3 points per contest from three-point range. He was shooting a little bit over 40% from distance, so he really does a great job in terms of being able to elevate this team. And then you've had Drake Kindle come in, and he's been able to give this team some really good production, 26 points in the first two games of the season, so this looks like be a little bit of a new look Wichita State team that's able to bomb it a little bit more from three. And Cron Boyd, who was a nice rebounder over at East Tennessee State last season, he's added a little bit of a three-point shot to his game as well. They have yet to see Jared Valencia at the floor, but overall, I take a look at Wichita State. I do think that they should be able to find a way to get the job done against a loyal Chicago team that they've just been very underwhelming thus far this season, and I don't know what the fix is going to be, but something appears to be very wrong with Loyola Chicago, and I just can't back them in this spot. And I do think that Loyola Chicago, they just were unable to get past 65 in that game against North Texas. They don't do their part with the total. I did set mine at a 150.5, so I'm going to be one take shot on the under, and I'm going to lay it with Wichita State. 755, 756 on the card. St. Thomas is playing us UW Green Bay. Green Bay is a 10-11 point underdog. Total on this game, it is 154.5. I did set my total at 154.5 as well. I'm seeing a stray 154 out there. So out of 154, less than on the over, 155 or higher, that'll be my buy point on the under. But that said, I'm going to be willing to lay it with St. Thomas. I did set them as an 18.5 point favorite. I just do not trust in this Doug Gottlieb system. Even though you bring back Marcus Hall, who was pretty rock solid last year with 13.5 points per contest, is able to give you a little bit of rebounding. This is a Green Bay team that leaves a lot to be desired. They were supposed to be landing a few guys in the transfer portal. Sheldon Williams-Dryden, that top scorer over at West Georgia, he just decided at the last minute that he wasn't going to be coming over for this team, so they really have a lack of size. You've got a 7-footer in Miran Cicic, who comes over from Montenegro, has not really made too much of an impact whatsoever. He's like the only guy that's above 6'6" that's seeing meaningful minutes right now. You do bring back a guy from last year, Preston Rudinger, who he was able to give you some good production. Rudinger has been around the block, 8 points, shot 36% from 3-point range last season, so he gives you a little bit of promise, but UW Green Bay was outside the top 350 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis last year. Currently, they're outside the top 350 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis once again this season as well. And I do think that this St. Thomas team that was 10th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis last year, they do lose their top three scorers, but they bring in pretty much the three ancillary guys. Noah Mindsale, who was able to give you double figures, is back. Ryan Default is back. Parker Kajerke, who's at 6'9". These guys all return in the fold, and you have a St. Thomas team that typically they get pounded on glass, but I mean, with UW Green Bay last year, they were one of the worst rebounding teams in all of college basketball. They have no size. You're bringing Austin Hero for the St. Thomas team. Recognize that he couldn't get out there on the floor over at South Carolina, but we all know his roots with the other Hero, who's currently tearing it up in the NBA. And then Ben Oosterbaan is a nice little bit of a gadget guy, hasn't seen a lot of minutes, but he was someone that last year gave the team 5 points, 3 boards, shot over 40% from 3-point range at 6'6". I don't think that UW Green Bay is going to be able to hold in this one. And St. Thomas has gotten a little bit better in terms of generating turnovers. Recognize that they had a little bit of a less than savory result against St. Mary's and Washington State in their West Coast road trip, but now they're back at home against a Green Bay team that they pounded on UW Green Bay's home floor by double figures 8 seasons ago, and I think that you see something similar here. 154 less than on the over, 155 or higher the under, and with St. Thomas, set them as an 18.5-point favorite. I'm going to lay that number. 757, 758 on the card. LSU is going to be playing against Florida International, and Florida International finds themselves as a good-sized underdog, 21-21 1.5 points. This total apparently opened up at a 151.5. I'm seeing as high as 157.5 right now, and very much agree with that move. I set my total at a 160.5. I'm in on the over. Florida National, year in and year out, is a pretty up-tempo team. Now, Florida National last year was outside the top 300 in terms of their overall three-point shooting percentage, which is why I did set LSU here as a 22.5 point favorite. I'd be willing to lay up to 22 with this LSU bunch, but that said, this is a Florida National team that they're always going to be gambling for turnovers with that pretty octane style. Going back to last season, for Florida National, 61st in the country in terms of total possessions per game. LSU pretty on par there. Under Ryan McMahon, they've been hovering right around about 75th in terms of total possessions per game. Last year, they were 72nd, and I recognize that LSU was outside the top 150 in terms of points scored on a per possession basis last season, but I do think that Deedon Thomas, who comes over from UNLV, he's a former top 100 recruit when he was over at UNLV last year, 15.5 points, 4 plus assists, shot in the high 30s from 3. He's going to do a nice job elevating this offense, and you've got a clear advantage down low with this LSU team as well. Jalen Reed is someone that at 6'10" is able to give you some good versatility. Unfortunately, was just limited to 8 games a season ago, but in this small sample size that he's had, a career 39% three-point shooter last year at 11 points per contest in those 8 games. You bring in Max McKinnon at 6'5", he's able to really stretch the floor as well. Pablo Tamba had a double-double in the team's most recent game against New Orleans as well, so you've got a lot of guys that are going to be able to pound it down low. Markel Sutton, who comes in from Omaha as well, and for Florida National, I do think that they might be able to generate a few turnovers, but having a guy like Thomas in the backcourt is going to really be able to neutralize that. And then you do have Corey Stevenson, who comes over from Cal State Bakersfield, meet for the Roadrunners. He should be able to give this Florida National team a little bit of pop on the offensive side of things. He shot 43% from three-point range last year, 11.5 points, 5.5 rebounds per game, so they're improved there. And Zwadi Jackson, he was the main scorer over at West Georgia 2 years ago. Last year at New Mexico State, rock solid guy, shot in the high 30s from three-point range, 10.5 points, 3 assists, steal per contest. That was a New Mexico State team that was really good at guarding the arc. Wasn't necessarily a team that generated as many turnovers, so I do think the Florida National might be down a little bit in terms of the way that they generate pressure. And then again, you just don't have a lot of size with this team. You've got one guy really in this rotation that stands above 6'6", aside from Eric Damabi, who he's a true freshman. He comes in from Cameroon. I don't think he's going to see a lot of minutes this year, but that'd be Larry Olakina. He was over at Sam Iamford last season, where he was seeing some okay minutes. It was part-time starter over at Utah Tech 2 seasons ago, but they need him to take a massive stride forward. It's always been an okay shot blocker, and he's been a part of a pair of systems that do run the floor, so that helps him out. And then you need Britt Harris. He comes on over from USC Upstate, where last year he's a double-figure scorer, to really be able to elevate his game, but that was a team that really didn't play any defense whatsoever as well, so I do think that LSU is going to take it to Florida National in what I think is going to be an up-and-down game. One delay up to 22 here with LSU, and like the oversight, my total at a 160.5. This is the last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we hit the extra games. 759, 760. It is Kansas State. They play us to Cal. Cal is an underdog of 6.5 points. This total is currently 161.5. I did set my total 154.5. I'm in on the under. Apparently, this opened up somewhere at a 154.5. I'm not sure where, but this has certainly gone up. And for Cal, I do think that this is going to be a team that plays with a lot of tempo, because if you just take a look at the track record of what you're going to be able to get with this team, going back to when Mark Madsen was over at Utah Valley, it seems we're always in the top 75 in terms of total possessions per game, but they were also top 40 teams in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. And I think that he finally has the personnel to do that here at Cal. You've got a guy in Lee Dort who is able to run the floor, but I mean, he's a little bit more of a rebound first guy, not necessarily going to give you a ton offensively. John Camden at 6'8" last year over at Delaware, shot over 40% from 3, 16 plus points per contest. He's currently duplicating those numbers at a higher level right now. And Day-Day Ames, who comes over from Virginia, he has been very tremendous for this team as far as he's put in there a combined 65 points in the first 3 games of the season. Career about 38% 3-point shooter, began his career over at Kansas State, where he also saw some solid minutes. And then you just have a little bit more depth with this team. Nolan Dorsey is not necessarily a guy that's going to take the top off of you, but comes in from Campbell, he's able to give you some solid minutes. Ryan Petratus, he was over at Air Force, where he 2 seasons ago was doing a little bit of everything for them, and he was a star for the team last year. He was taking on a little bit of a smaller role, but I mean, even last year, 8 points, 5.5 boards, wasn't a great 3-point shooter, but when he was over at Air Force, he was able to bomb it a little bit more from three. And Kansas State, you do have to have some question marks with regards to coaching of this team, as I mean, it was a tremendous year number one for Jerome Tang, and thus far, first 2 games of the season, nice blowout wins over Bellarmine along with UNC Greensboro, but those are 2 teams that are not going to be competing for an NCAA tournament, that's for sure. And you bring in PJ Haggerty, last year over at Memphis, 21.5 points, 5+ assists, 5+ rebounds, shot it well from three, and Abdi Bashir gives a 20-point-per-game score over at Monmouth. So you've got some nice scoring there. I do like the fact that they went a little bit more the mid-major route this season as well. They brought in a little bit more, shall we say, steak, a little bit less sizzle. I think that that's actually going to be very good for this team moving forward. But that said, you do have to have question marks as to what you're going to be able to get out of like a Kamani McGriff. What are you going to be able to get out of Christian Jones, who he was with UIC a few seasons ago. Last year for this Kansas State team was rock solid, and he hasn't gotten a lot of minutes thus far this season. So, I mean, it's just very interesting with regards to rotations. You don't necessarily have a ton down low as well, and I do think that for Cal, with having Lee Dort down low, that's going to be able to keep them very lively in this game. I did set my line here at a 6.5. I'm right now seeing between 6.5 and 7. If we can get a 7+, I'm going to be willing to take those points with Cal. And with regards to total, I'm in on the under. I set my total at a 154.5, and now we hit the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
306-603, 306-604. It is Cornell, and they are going to be on the road facing off against Lafayette. Lafayette finds themselves as a home underdog of 4.5 points. So on this game, it is 157.5. Set my line at a 157.5 as well. Right now, I'm only seeing a FanDuel opener, so we'll see how this progresses. But 157 or less, I like the over. 158 or higher, the under. But I did set Cornell here as a 7.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay it for Lafayette. They do bring back some ancillary guards from a season ago. Like, you've got Mark Butler back, who's always been like a 7 to 8 point-per-game scorer. Ryan Pettit had a really nice year, like, 2 years ago, where he was averaging about 5 points, giving out an assist and a half per contest, has taken a little bit of setback since then. Now they need him to be elevate, but I mean, you had some really good 3-point shooting last season, and that's really gone. Alex Shulkin was shooting over 44% from 3-point, and then you lose that big man in Justin Vanderbond, who was giving the team 3 blocks per contest. And I mean, while Cornell is a team that is always in the top 30 in terms of percent of their shots that come from 3-point, they're also traditionally a team that ranks in the top 10 in terms of their 2-point shooting percentage as well. And I think that that's something that gets lost on a lot of people. So being able to drive it down low, they should be able to have a lot of success with that regard. And for this Cornell team, they do lose a few guys from a season ago, but you've got Cooper Norrie back, who was a nice double figure scorer from a season ago. Now they should be able to do a little better job on the glass as they bring in the Valparaiso big man in Casper Sepp. Sepp last year only 3.5 points, but he was able to average 5.5 rebounds per game. So he actually averaged more rebounds than he did points. And I do think that for Cornell, that was something that was really missing for them. They had a tough time grabbing second and third chances. He cleans that up for them a little bit. And then you've got a guy in Josh Baldwin, who he's been around the block, really didn't get a lot of run last season for this team, but in the small sample size he played, he gave the team 4.5 points per contest. He was shooting 50% from three, again, in a very small sample size, and I think that he's going to be able to take a nice stride forward. You've had a little bit of, shall we say, dominance with your top two guys in Norrie, along with Adam Sang Hinton, who's been averaging 20.5 points per contest. I think that these guys like DJ Nix and company are going to come along for the ride. A little bit of the low scoring for Cornell to begin the season is the fact that you go up against Illinois State, a team that's very controlled outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game. They did get past 100 against Kent State to begin the season as well. That was a very wild game. So I do think that with this Cornell bunch, they do a nice job of taking it to a Lafayette team that's in a lot of transition. They don't necessarily have those rock solid guards down low. So I'm going to be willing to lay it with Cornell. And I did set a total to where 157 or less in on the over, 158 or higher the under. Lafayette traditionally outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game. 306-605, 306-606. You've got Alcorn State, and they're going to be on the road facing off against Howard. And Howard is a 6.5-point favorite total on this game. You're getting it at a 158, and I set my total at 164. I do like the over for Howard. This has just been a notoriously bad defense over the last few seasons. Looks like they might be a little bit better on the defensive side of things this year, but last year they were well outside the top 300 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. And for Howard last season, offense wasn't necessarily where you expected it to be because they were dealing with an injury to their main scorer, Mr. Harris, but you get him back in the fold, and this is a Howard team that year in and year out, they do a pretty solid job in terms of getting the transfer portal. It was a little bit down this year, but bringing back Bryce Harris, who I still remember 2 years ago prior to going down with an injury last season, he was putting their 16.5 points, 7.5 boards, steal, block per contest, shot 37.5% from three, limited to 7 games due to injury last year. He's a guy that should be able to elevate this offense, and I mean, thus far, he's been averaging over over 20 points per contest. You're bringing in Cam Gillis, who is a nice go-to guy over at Lehigh last season. He was the starter that put in their 9.5 points. Not an amazing three-point shooter, career about 33% three-point shooter. And this is going to be a team that leaves something to be desired down low. They pretty much only have one rotation piece that's above 6'6". That'd be Donis Kavavicius. Hopefully I said that correct. International man of mystery that comes on over at 6'10". He's a freshman, but you do have Eddie Holland, who he was pretty rock solid over at Penn a few seasons ago, where he was supplying the team during the 2023-24 campaign with about 6 points per contest. Another guy that's just dealt with a little bit of injury in general, but I do think that this backcourt is going to do a nice job against an Elkhorn State team that is very clear that they're going to be looking to push tempo. We saw them give up well above 100 points in that first game against Florida State, and man, it just has not really gotten a whole heck of a lot better for this defense. They were able to hold up a little bit against South Alabama, but right now they are giving up over 90 points per game, and they're just getting plowed down low. They're allowing opponents to shoot over 61% from two-pointers. You're not doing the world's worst job in terms of being able to guard the three-point arc, but this is clearly a team that doesn't have a lot of size. You've got Will Henderson. He stands 6'10", began his career over at Hampton, where he was unable to get any run over there. Had to go down to the 91 ranks. He's pretty much your main low-post piece at this point. You've had Shane Lancaster actually do a very solid job in terms of giving the team production. He began his career in Niagara, had to go down to the 91 ranks, but he's been able to supply the team with about 14 points per contest. But for Alcorn State, I don't think that they have the firepower to be able to match up with Howard, a team that they are very much looking to play a lot of positionless basketball as well. They don't necessarily have a ton of size, but they've got more size than this Alcorn State team. Though I will say Travis Roberts, who he comes over after being over at Jacksonville State and Marist, actually saw some starts at Jacksonville State a few seasons ago. He's got a little bit of versatility at 6'6", career about 34.5% three-point shooter, but this is an Alcorn State team that they're very much looking to turn over a new leaf. They're under the tutelage of Jake Morton. He was an assistant over at Florida State, so he learned under the Leonard Hamilton sort of veil. Alcorn State not doing a great job in terms of being able to generate turnovers either for this Alcorn State team. They have really had their struggles with regards to giving it up on the inside. I do think that Howard, a team that, even though they've got a lot of guard play, they oftentimes have one of the lower three-point shot rates in all of college basketball. They take it to them. I'm willing to lay up to 7.5 here with Howard. Somebody total 164, so I'm also in on the over. 306-607, 306-608. You've got UMass, and they're going to be playing us at Lemoyne, a 13.5-point underdog. 161.5 is the total. Somebody line at 13, so 13.5, that does become my buy point on Lemoyne for UMass. This team under Frank Martin, I think, is a little bit better than they were a season ago. Well, it can't be much worse with their three-point shooting. They're in the bottom five in all of college basketball in terms of their three-point shooting percentage. They didn't do a ton to be able to upgrade it, though. Leonardo Batuel was a double-figure scorer over at Abilene Christian last season, but he's not a guy that really pops it and locks it from three-point range. A guy that really is going to be elevate them is Marcus Banks. Banks, two seasons ago over at UMBC, was giving you 15 points per contest, followed that up with 16 points per contest and 42% three-point shooting last year, so he does a good job of being able to elevate that offense, and he do return some of the ancillary pieces from a season ago. They do lose a lot of their top guys, but that's a Daniel Hankins-Sanford, who was able to give you 6 rebounds per game, and Jaden Ndunji, who last year, about 4.5 points, 4.5 boards per contest. They're back. Those are more low-post pieces. Those are not guys that are going to really be ripping the top off of a defense, and for Lemoyne, I recognize that this Xavier team is going to be way down this year. Hell within single digits on the road against them. Nate Champion seems to be doing a good job with this team, and they've got a few guys that returned from a season ago, like Trent Mascara. He's really been the main go-to guy, averaging 15 points per contest this season after last year. He was just limited to 9 games due to injury. You go back to Lemoyne's first year at the Division I ranks, he was averaging 4.5 points. He was a nice integral part coming in off the bench for this team, and then you've got Dimitri Moss, who began his career over at North Florida. He gives this team some nice versatility. 2 years ago, was averaging about 11 points on mid-30s three-point shooting. Just fell a little bit out of favor last season in a little bit more of a reserve role, but he helps out Tennessee Rainwater. I'm not even kidding. That's the same. Comes on over from Utah Tech. At 6'6", really doesn't bomb it from three, but he gives this team some rebounding that they haven't had in the past, as this has been a Lemoyne team that's since coming up to the Division I level due to their lack of size. They haven't had too much of that, but you bring in a guy like a Shiloh Jackson as well. He was over at Texas A&M Corpus Christi last season, where he was a nice reserve piece that was able to give the team like 4 points, 3 boards per contest. So he gives them a little bit more of that as well. I do think that Lemoyne is going to have it taken to them down low. But again, with UMass, even with bringing in Marcus Banks, not necessarily a great 3-point shooting team with UMass, they'll get those second and third chances. But I do think that Lemoyne's backcourt and the fact that this Lemoyne team is right now generating north of 13 turnovers per game keeps them lively in this game. So I did set my line at a 13. I'm going to be willing to take the points with Lemoyne. I just flat out don't think that UMass hits enough shots to be able to get this total over, even though they were a top 50 team in terms of total possessions per game last year. Semi total 157, like the under. 3-6, 6-9, 3-6, 6-10. Columbia is going to be playing host to UMass Lowell. You're going to get Lowell for UMass Lowell because, well, they are a very lowly team right now. They're 12-point underdogs, so on this game it's 156, and I'm going to be one away with Columbia. I set them as 16-point favorite. UMass Lowell lost everything from a season ago. I'm not even kidding. I'm pretty sure that they lost 99% of their scoring from a season ago. And for UMass Lowell, just a sad and pathetic loss for them a few days ago on their home floor against a New Haven team that had lost by 44 at home against Penn State over the weekend. They lose at home to give them their first ever Division I win. Like, yay verily for New Haven, but man, this is not great. You've got J.J. Massacoy as a freshman right now leading the way in terms of scoring. They were looking at Jared Frey, who was on a Stony Brook team that was awful last year, averaging 8.5 points per contest, really elevate them. His career about 35% three-point shooter, but when this UMass Lowell team has really been at the height of the powers and have been a relatively respectable mid-major, they've been able to do so down low. You've only got really one guy seeing minutes that's above 6'6". That's Austin Green, who comes over from Texas State, where he was averaging about 3.5 points per contest, had a tough time getting out there on the floor. This is a team that is just not the same in the post, and for Columbia, you do have some guys with some size. Zadina De Badri, he's saying 6'10". He comes on over from Algeria. He's been with the program for quite a while. He doesn't take a lot of threes, but when he pops it from three, he's actually not been too bad. He gives you 5+ rebounds per game. Blair Thompson is a former top 250 recruit that has been in the system for a very long time. Last year, 8.5 points, shot in the low 30s from three, 6.5 rebounds, a steal per contest. He should be able to help out. Now, this team is no longer with Geronimo Rubio De La Rosa, who's really been the main guy for them over the last few seasons, but when he was out with injury last year, Kenny Nolan was able to see some good minutes as the primary guy. And I think that he's going to be that once again. He's been able to give the team 22 points in the first two games of the season, career 38% three-point shooter. And for UMass Lowell, they're not even doing a good job in terms of guarding the three-point arc. You've got Avery Baumbach as well. After he was a double-figure scorer for this Columbia team, he's been a three-year starter. And even though you had a little bit of coaching change in the offseason, as Kevin Hovde, he takes over, Columbia was able to maintain a lot of their guys. A lot of it is because you're there for the academics a little bit more than you're there for the basketball. But I think that Hovde, who did a tremendous job as an assistant over at Florida, he's going to be able to do the same year with Columbia. And I do think that Columbia, they were outside the top 3 in terms of points a lot on a per possession basis. They're still going to be a pretty high octane team, but I just don't know if UMass Lowell does their part with this total. Like, they couldn't get past 70 against New Haven a few nights ago. Set my total here at a 154, so at the 156, I like the under, and I'm going to be willing to lay up to 15.5 here with Columbia. 3-6, 6-11, 3-6, 6-12. Grambling is playing against Southern Miss, and Southern Miss finds themselves as a 2-point road favorite. Total on this game, it is 154. So Southern Miss has a 2.5 point favorite. I'm not willing to lay anything more than 2, but I'm going to be willing to lay. The good news is they get out of the Andre Curbelo sweepstakes. Southern Miss was held hostage by Andre Curbelo over the last few seasons, one of the biggest knuckleheads that we've ever seen in college basketball, and now they're going to be looking to Isaac Tavares to really be able to elevate them, a guy that last season was part of that Fresno State team that unfortunately had a little bit of a gambling scandal, but I knew he was able to spy that team with 5 points, was a very highly touted non-division 1 guy a few seasons ago, but they do a nice job in terms of being able to elevate themselves down low a little bit as well. DeG Benoit, he was a nice rebounder over at Alcorn State, where he was able to pull in there about 6 to 7 rebounds per game 8 seasons ago. That should be able to help them out a little bit. Israel Hart is a very highly touted non-D1 guy that should be able to give this team a little bit of pop. Along Talik Weeks, they really went the junior college route, bringing in some of these guys like, hey, Kurt Lewis. I know that he's been around the block, Eastern Kentucky, Missouri, East Tennessee State, but this was a former top 10 junior college transfer, according to JucoRecruiting.com, in that 2023 cycle. Just could never really find it when he's over at Missouri, and unfortunately over at ETSU, he saw some starts last year, but got injured after 8 games. He's a guy that 6'5", gives you some nice versatility as well, and for Grambling, I do love the fact that you've got a coach that knows what the heck he's doing in Patrick Curry. He was at the NAI level a few seasons ago over at St. Mary's of Texas, and I mean, he brought with him a few guys that made him successful over at Florida A&M, Roderick Coffey being the main of them. Wasn't a primary scorer, but would give you like 8 points, 4 boards, 3 assists per contest. Just did a little bit of this and that. They're going to be looking to Ricky Ballard to be able to uplift them as well. He over at West Georgia last year, 6.5 points, shot 38.9% from 3 points. The one thing that he was really missing, Crary, was with the guys that he brought over from Florida A&M, was the good 3-point shooters really didn't follow him up. So they are going to be looking a little bit more down low with Devon Franklin, who's saying 6'8". He's going to need to be able to give you a little bit of rebounding. They've got quite a bit of size, but they don't necessarily have as much versatility as his team did over at Florida A&M a season ago. Jamel Lane is going to need to really give you some good production as well. Another guy that began his career at the non-division 1 level level starter over at Northwestern State last year, 5.5 points, but only shot about 29% from 3-point range. I do think that in the end, Southern Miss is going to be able to hold up down low. I think that their backcourt play just enough to be able to pull this one out. I set my line at a 2.5. I'm willing to lay up to a deuce here with Southern Miss, and did set my total 150.5. I just don't think that Grambling is going to have the 3-point shooting to help you out with the total, so made a total of a 150.5 in on the under. I'm willing to lay up to a deuce here with Southern Miss. 306-613, 306-614. Houston Christian plays host to Louisiana Monroe. Monroe is a underdog of between 8.5 to 9 points. Total on this game, it is 147. Set my line at 8.5, so at a 9+, I'm going to be willing to take the points with Louisiana Monroe. If we dip down below an 8, that becomes my buy point on Houston Christian. As Houston Christian, they did a really nice job in turning over a new leaf last season, because when they were under Ron Cottrell, this team played no defense whatsoever. They would run it, they would gun it, and they would give up 85 points in hopes that they would score 90, and very rarely did they score 90. Now they're under Craig Doty, who he was very good over at Emporia State 2 seasons ago, instilled in the team a very much slower system. They were outside the top 3 last year in terms of total possessions per game. Now I want to see a little bit more out of Johnny Lee. He was actually a very solid player over at St. Thomas a few seasons ago, 2 years ago. He was able to give that team about 4 points out, 37%. 3-point shooting was just banged up last season and has yet to see a lot of minutes thus far this season. You do lose pretty much 3 out of your top 4 scorers from a season ago from what was a very successful Houston Christian team. So now they're looking at Marco Bethea, who he over at Texas A&M Commerce / East Texas A&M last year was a little bit of a gadget guy. 7 points, 4 boards, a steal per contest, but not necessarily a guy that's going to uplift you from 3 points. So that means that DeAndre Samuels, who's one of their main holdovers from the season ago, he's going to need to lock down in the backcourt. 7 points on 37% 3-point shooting, but it's very clear that the Houston Christian team in a little bit of transition with that 3-point shooting with Kylan Green, who's a relatively solid facilitator, just not having a lot of guys to be able to facilitate too right now. And for Louisiana Monroe, just a big giant change with regards to their coaching staff, as they actually made a midseason change last season. And now you've got Mr. Cunningham, who he was spending some time over at Troy, and Phil Cunningham coming on over to try to be able to uplift this program. And he was able to maintain a few guys from the previous regime. You've got Christian Lewis, who he's a guy that I think has a lot of upside. 15 points per contest comes on him from the non-D1 ranks. Matavius Russell was a former top 300 recruit of Mississippi State, just could never get out there on the floor for them, but he's doing a little bit of mixing and matching. This is going to be a team that probably plays a lot of positionless basketball. Shemek Hartman, he comes on over from Poland. He had 6'9", is able to give you some good versatility. They've got a lot of international man of mystery. Rinas Saunders, he comes over from Latvia. He's been able to give the team 10.5 points per contest. You've got Alex Hugoy Carrasco, who comes on over from Spain. He's another 6'7", a little bit of a gadget guy as well. We have yet to see Bente Noel as well. He was over at Southern a few seasons ago. He should be able to give this team a little bit of rebounding at 6'10". So this team clearly went for size. They've got Lewis doing a nice job in terms of running the point guard spot. They did a nice job in terms of bringing in some international guys that I think are going to be able to keep them lively against the Houston Christian team that lost a lot of what made them so successful a season ago. And for Louisiana Monroe, there's reason to believe that they're going to be a team that's going to be looking to play relatively controlled, as in their 2 games against Division I teams as far this season, it's been a little bit random. They score only 65 points against Ole Miss. They did give up a 100 spot to Northern Illinois, but you've also got a Houston Christian team that I do think that they're going to have a little bit of a tough time being able to find 3-point shooting this year. So at a 9+, I'm going to be willing to take the points with Monroe. I did set my total 144.5, so you're the 147. I like the under and wrap things up with 306-515, 306-516. Alabama A&M plays also Charleston Southern. Charleston Southern's a 1-point dog, and your total is 155. Did set my total 147.5. I like the under. Now, Alabama A&M last year was a top 40 team in terms of total possessions per game. This is a completely different Alabama A&M team from a season ago, because they made a big time coaching change. They bring in a man that was able to guide Grambling to a few NCAA tournaments in Dante Jackson, where his Grambling team's always outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game, and he brings with him one of the main guards from a season ago, Contavious Dozier, who was able to give you 12 points, 3 assists, shot relatively solid from 3-point range, and it looks like they're going to be having Sammy Pacisis, who last season was a double-figure scorer over at New Hampshire, try to run the show last year at New Hampshire, about 3 assists per contest, just due to all the injuries of New Hampshire. He had to be a little bit of a do-it-all sort of guy, so that brought down his overall efficiency, but also think that Lewis Hutchinson, who's been very much around the block, he was playing over at Grambling with Jackson last season, began his career over at Rhode Island, so it's been a long and winding road. He gives them a little bit of contributions in terms of just being a coach out there on the floor. Not going to give you a ton in terms of scoring, but he's done a nice job in terms of being able to hit the boards, give you a little bit of this and that as a 6'7", a little bit of a gadget wing, and then James Graham is a guy that I really like. He's a man that last year over at Buffalo just could not get out there on the floor due to injury, but you go back 2 seasons ago over at Missouri State, he was able to give that team like 4 points off. He started, shot 42.5% from three at 6'8", so he gives the team a little bit of unexpected versatility. And for Charleston Southern, they've got Todd Nimley, who was a very good star player for that team about a decade and a half ago, coming in to be able to coach him up. And this is a much more respectable team, especially with Alon Sumler, who 2 seasons ago was a nice double figure scorer, coming back as well, missed all of last year due to injury. So that really gives the team a nice little bit of a boost. But with Charleston Southern, their problem has always been on the defensive side of things, and more specifically, being able to just guard the perimeter. They've always been a team that's been outside the top 225 in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage. Now, they bring in Bradford Squared. We have yet to see Devin Bradford hit the floor. He was over at Siena last year, where at 7'1", he was giving that team a little bit over a block per contest. Now, we've seen the other Bradford, and Nate Bradford, he was over at Georgia Southern last season. He's been pretty solid. Last year, over at Georgia Southern, didn't see a lot of minutes. 2 years ago, he was giving that team 5.5 points, 3.5 boards as a little bit of a part-time starter. He's been, thus far, early turns, pretty solid, giving you a little bit over 4 rebounds per game, and that's big because Reese Jones, who's been in the program for quite a while, 5.5 points, 5.5 boards per contest last season, he's been able to do a nice job there. But for Charleston Southern, where they're really going wrong is just not forcing pressure on the ball. They've only been able to generate 27 turnovers in their first 3 games of the season, so opponents are getting a lot of clean possessions. That's big for an Alabama A&M team that's in a little bit of transition, and even going back to that Grambling team a season ago, they did have a little bit of a tough time taking care of the ball. That's going to take care of things for them, and this is a Charleston Southern team that's very clear that they're looking to bomb from three. They are attempting over 50% of their field goal attempts from three-point range. Grambling, always a very solid defensive team. I think that they're going to take away those looks. They've got some nice size around the perimeter, and I think that that's going to allow this Alabama A&M team to get the job done and to slow things down a little bit. Somebody told 147.5, I like the under, and I do like Alabama A&M on this very tight line, and that'll wrap things up for the Thursday edition of Cusco Soups, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Big thanks to Rob Donaldson, who does great work with the show/podcast, Rob's the Best Bets. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Cusco Soups, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of 2 ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter/XIMLine at GUDN_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter, so per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review, and I'm with you guys every single day, giving you picks and analysis on every game, every day. So I'll be back with you once you get them up. Thank you.